Thank you very much. It is interesting to talk about eating dog food when you have worked at Highwire before, because it certainly has a different meaning there. As with many consortial endeavors, the person who starts the project gets to do the prototype. I was starting the presentation, so I thought I would use Keynote and get some slides going there. Greg wanted to use PowerPoint, so like good consortial partners, we got a meeting together to write a mandate for a TUG group to select a presentation software for Access 2008. We formed a representative committee from each of our institutions, which is Guelph, Waterloo, and Laurier, and we started to have meetings about the relative benefits of each of the options and write a recommendation. The draft report is just about ready for submission. So I'm wondering, does everyone have an overhead projector? We titled this one Moving Forward Together, and we subtitled it A Consortial Discovery Layer when Amanda was asking for the title for her publication deadline. We have some other words of wisdom now. If you're going through hell, keep going. As you just heard, I returned to an academic library after working at Ovid Technologies and Highwire Press. I was a system librarian before that, and I left libraries because we weren't doing development in libraries anymore. So you had to go to a company like Ovid or a place like Highwire to do development. Just as I was leaving Ovid, we were about to migrate from Notice to Endeavor. So imagine my shock when I get back to Waterloo and found that the OPAC looked essentially the same as it did in 1996 when we were moving from Notice to Endeavor. Remember the internet in 1996? I couldn't get quite back far enough, but this was our this was the library homepage at Waterloo in 1997 from the Internet Archive. The design elements of Gopher. I'm pretty sure we won a reward for this, though. In 1997, the university librarian was always at the door of the library, welcoming people to the library. And also, my favorite thing about this now, though, is that finding information and using the library are separate headings. We have another one here from Guelph. It's a little bit later, from December 11th, 1997. And here we see the beauty of anchor links. Don't you like how they use the fold here? And you can't actually change the font. No one ever changes the size of their font, so you can control how people are using it. My favorite thing, though, with this one is that they spelt page wrong in library homepage in the title tag of it. So given these examples, we've come a long way in our libraries with our web presences. How can our OPAC be essentially the same? So we get into why Primo, and I'm going to do this at the beginning rather than through the end and then give you some more context throughout. So there's a systems, the look and feel of the current web of our current interface does not meet the needs or expectations of web savvy users. We've said that many times in this conference, and it's really true. We have a systems design class that uses the library for their projects, and you can see how they sort of regard us somewhat pityingly as they come and talk to us about our ILS and the system that we ask them to use. We also moved in this direction to engage with users with new features in an attempt to become relevant in their information-seeking universe. This summer, I went to the Mark Logic Conference and heard a keynote from Andrew McAfee from the Harvard Business School. He's the guy who coined the term Enterprise 2.0. He described a search initiated from his library site on ProQuest for Gran Ovitor, which is an author's name, and Weak Ties in the document title. This is a seminal paper in business. So he went to his library, he went to ProQuest, he did a search. He spelt the author wrong, so the did you mean grabbed it and said, oh, you spelt the author wrong, try it this way. He clicked on it, and the system formatted the query incorrectly, and he ended up with nothing. So a landmark paper, and he couldn't find it. He went to Google Scholar, put in those three words. What was the first paper that he saw? It was the paper that he was looking for. After the presentation, I went up to him, and I asked him if he had gone and talked to his librarians about that experience at all, just to, you know, let him know, because maybe there's something that we could talk to the vendor about or talk to them about a little bit more. He gave me what he described as a cold-hearted answer. He could not be bothered to talk to his librarians because he had better things to do, and he would just continue to use Google Scholar. Needless to say, I was glad I asked this after and not in the actual session, as I did want that answer in the session. And also, we were hoping to begin to address our current disjointed library experience. The classic example of this is how we've been dealing with ebooks lately. So look for ebooks in our catalog, plus look in all of these 20 other vendor sites that might have ebooks that you might find. And so that's the other thing that we were trying to take a look at here. ILS replacement was not our goal at that time. OPAC replacement was not also not our goal. Migrating to a new ILS was not a direction we wished to move in last summer. The other modules of Voyager are arguably not as broken as the OPAC. But we do have to start with the OPAC as a necessary point for the implementation, and Greg is going to get into the fun of that as we go along here. We wanted to integrate new types of metadata. We wanted to not have to mark catalog everything and put it in through our catalog. We wanted some other options for ingestion, including XML. Primo has a module called Deep Search. It's an API that you can bring to bear to search other types of information as well, and Greg is going to get into that a little bit more. It was developed with the Royal Library of Denmark. And we always had the goal to try to integrate Ontario Scholar Portal into this if we possibly could. And it looked like either through OAI ingestion or through Deep Search we were going to be able to do that. And happily, we're going to start working with the Scholars Portal people later in October to try to get the Scholars Portal data in there in the context of their new MarkLogic science server infrastructure. We were also trying to leverage our existing library expertise and recognize the fact that we are not development organizations. Here, our experience at Waterloo is that we're not yet a development organization. I'll get into that a little bit more, too. But we do have skills and knowledge to bring into a discovery layer project. For example, if the library community believes that Ferberized records are a good idea, then someone should try it out and actually see how our users react to it. Integration of systems and interfaces should be easier, and I'll just leave it like that, should be easier for the vendor that wrote them than for the library. So we have Voyager and SFX, and as we were making this decision, we were about to go with Verde as well, so to replace our homegrown ERM system. And these systems really should work better than they do, together better than they do. And then finally, we had an opportunity with our current vendor to overcome the difficulties of their pricing model. Ex Libris's pricing model for this product is deeply flawed. At a meeting with Oren, I commented on the first quote for this product that I received, and he suggested that we negotiate. So that's what we ended up doing. He actually said, negotiate. Libraries should not have to think about, and the biggest problem with their pricing model is that it's a per-record model. Libraries should not have to think about adding records to their discovery layer. You shouldn't have to have a payment penalty for that. But we were able, like I said, we were able to negotiate with our vendor and look at this as an upgrade. But I don't know how they would ever win a RFP, given the way that they're pricing this thing. So back a little bit to the freeze-dried librarian. I was motivated to return to an academic library because our traditional vendors had stopped doing the development work necessary. And that's what I like to do. You could see it. The Indeca was coming out. People were doing their own things. We were, all that stuff about the OPAC was going on as well. So it looked like the time was ripe to try to get back in the library. I love working in libraries. It was my favorite job at UTA. It was a fantastic job. And there was some exciting local development projects going on, and it was the development work that sort of lured me back. And I admit now that what lured me away from libraries in the first place was that we were not doing that kind of work anymore. So this is great that we're actually starting to do this kind of stuff. I wrote this sentence within a month of returning to Waterloo, but things turned out to be a little more complex than I expected. And that's where we get into enthusiastic amateurs. We've talked about this a little bit at this conference. People are sitting down and doing great things, and that's fantastic. But this enthusiastic amateurs came from our sysadmin for Voyager and for our Sun infrastructure. That's what he calls it. I am essentially the highest qualified system administrator at Waterloo Library because I did training in it 10 years ago. So the situation, and your situation might be different. I'm just trying to explain our situation. We have many current single points of failure in our organization, and the people and systems who do our programming are two. So they are also the sysadmins for Windows, Red Hat, and Debian, and also the database administrators for SQL and Postgres. And I don't think we're unique in this position. A lot of us have these kinds of challenges with staffing. You've got one or two people who are keeping the ship afloat, and it's really hard with the firefighting that they're doing to ask them to actually do development projects as well. It's just the reality of the situation, and I don't think we're completely unique in this situation either. For example, we had a issue with our DSpace implementation. So this is a large development project that we had done. All of the theses at Waterloo are added to DSpace by the people who write them, and they go through the grad studies. It's a great project, a fantastic project. But we hired a co-op to do it. And when something went wrong, we had to call that co-op back to do it again because we didn't have the expertise to actually, in a timely fashion, fix the problem along the way. Again, this is our situation, the situation that we were finding here. On the plus side, I have been able to hire that person, and he's now working on an open journal system project for us now. So there is some good things happening along the way. But these are some of the processes I think that libraries will need to introduce and improve as we move to become development organizations. Let's see. There we go. Sorry. That's working. Some of these have come up in other organizations throughout this conference as well. We really need to get better at some of these things to be able to move forward in a sustainable fashion. I remember when a new programming manager came to Ovid from Northern Telecom and showed us this image in his introduction to his views on our existing development process at Ovid. The caption to this reads, some of you might recognize this, but the caption to this reads, "Here is Edward Bear coming downstairs now, bump, bump, bump on the back of his head, behind Christopher Robin. It is, as far as he knows, the only way of coming downstairs. But sometimes he feels that there really is another way, if only he could stop bumping for a moment and think of it." So I'm glad you clapped, because needless to say, we were not very happy when he did this to us. We thought we had perfectly acceptable processes for our size of organization. Everything, he had come from an organization with thousands of programmers. We were an organization with dozens of programmers. To us, it seemed like process for process sake. But really, I have more sympathy for his view now. He was just trying to make a point and using a great picture to do it. And in my current environment, I'm really reacting to what he had said to us all those years ago. He was just trying to make a point for us to try to think about doing things differently, about how we have to do development differently than we're currently doing it. In addition to resource challenges that we've just discussed, we also have organizational challenges. TUG, again, is Laurier, Waterloo, and Guelph. And it's hard to distinguish what is a local project, what is a TUG project, what is an OCA project, what is a CARL project, what is a CRKN project, and how all those things fit together. We are a small consortia in a larger consortia and aligned with other research organizations. We work together very well and come up with way better solutions together than we would ever have done alone. But communication is always a challenge, especially across different institutions and different geographic locations, and with different funding models, and with external pressures, and indeed with strategic directions that don't necessarily match. But we are going to continue to be working in a complex and heterogeneous environment for some years. Our processes, our 20th century processes, are straining under the pressures of mass digitization projects and bulk consortia purchases. I probably shouldn't mention this, but I will. When I got to Waterloo, we hadn't loaded the EBO records for 2 years. They were sitting because the records were not of high enough quality for us to load them. And so they sat and sat and sat. We're not doing that anymore. A record is better than no record, and so we're starting to do things a little bit differently. But it was a change of culture. It was a change that we had to sort of get people through. 10-year-old problems are really difficult to solve, especially when everything else has changed dramatically in the intervening time. But TUG also has a whole bunch of benefits, and the primary one is the benefits to our users. We have a TUG Doc service that delivers materials from each of the schools to the other schools within a day. The annex is our remote storage site. We have a great partnership with Trellis and work together. And we also do a lot of piloting and new things together. And the biggest thing is the staffing efficiencies. If somebody at Waterloo doesn't have time to do something, they talk to their friends at Guelph and Laurier and we get it done. It's really a fantastic thing. And the key is that we are doing these things to benefit our users. So a strategic direction was reached in April 2007, and the direction for the discovery layer was articulated. It has been clear for some time now that there is a need for a concerted effort to investigate and introduce a new search and discovery interface for access to resources both within the catalog, i.e. Trellis, and the many other electronic information resources available to our user communities. So that's the die was cast. We were going to do a discovery layer. Our hope was that we could change what is now the center of our operations, the ILS, to an edge. And so we began by decoupling the interface. Starting with decoupling was an important decision for us. The other thing that was important for us was to recognize that the current environment is pretty unstable. There's some need for concern about what's going on right now. Last year in the ILS discussion at Access, I said that I would like some insurance given the current environment of the ILS marketplace. And I am really glad that there are initiatives going on forward that should provide us with more options in the future. These were all great options at the time when we were looking for a discovery layer. You've all run into these. Other ones have come. All of these are viable. All of these are great. And these are all things that we explored and thought about and talked about at the time. And there really is no one right answer to any of these questions. But the challenges right now are pretty dire. I think we need to actually start doing something and engaging with our users to figure out what they want to do next, to see if we can actually become relevant again. At the beginning of the collaboration of TUG, they tried to tie all of our websites together so that we were all one, and that quickly didn't work because we are separate organizations and individual campuses. So a primary lesson of TUG was that one size does not fit all. So when you are looking at the same set of variables that we looked at, you're going to come up with different conclusions. That's great. I think that's fantastic. And then as long as we collaborate together at the end and move things forward, that's the best of all worlds. So from a feature standpoint, the bar was pretty low with the Voyager OPAC. So, you know, just about anything would work there. From discussions with the development partners and other adopters of Primo, it seemed that integration, maintenance, and scalability, which are all things that are really important, especially given the staffing situation that I just described, it seemed that Primo was going to work for our needs. The ability to migrate was an unknown. We weren't sure if we were going to be able to take out the social things, the tagging, et cetera, out of Primo to take it to another discovery layer if we needed to do that later. But that was the idea, that we would be able to do that. We were able to negotiate a site license that allowed us to move forward, so the course was set. We, of course, are the tugboat in this picture, and we can cut that big sucker out anytime we want. And thank you, Walter, for this image. It's a great image. After the course was set, there was, and of course still is, quite a bit of angst. I went to each of these presentations from the U of T Discovery RFI, starting with the Sidarian one, which was a fantastic system. Talk about stewing in your own juices. That thing was really a fantastic system. Beautiful administrative functions, built from the ground up for semantic web. It was great. However, many of these would have been very difficult for us in our context, which I think you'll recognize is probably a little different than Toronto's, because they were hoping to look for a product that would meet their needs for the next 10 years. So they're talking about a very different product than we were. The other thing that came out afterwards was ViewFind, and we looked at it and talked about it, and then I lay back on my bed of nails after that as well, and I think we'll be hearing about ViewFind next. There's also angst just in general in the context of Google and WorldCat and my experience at the MarkLogic conference. There are, I think, 5 different discovery layer initiatives going on in Ontario, and the idea is that once we have a little bit more experience with them, we're going to all get together and kick the tires of each of these systems and take a look and see what makes sense for everybody now. So I think that's going to happen sometime in early 2009 as we get experience with these new interfaces and their capabilities. And that should provide a great forum for more collaboration and further discussion. And now I think I'm going to turn it over to Greg for the actual sausage factory.
So Alan mentioned that OPAC replacement was not really our goal, and of course ILS replacement was not our goal, but as a project manager, for me, replacing the OPAC, the front end of what we have in our Trellis catalog, is a pretty significant milestone. And so I'm going to be talking just briefly about the timeline that we've been following since the decision was made, and then talk about how we are excited about moving forward from where we are right now. So the decision was made in mid-2007 to go ahead with Primo, as Alan described, and we started at that point to figure out how to engage our staff. How do we make... We've been running this Voyager software underpinning our Trellis catalog for 10 years, and we've pretty well maxed out. And engaging our staff and engaging our users and trying to figure out how to make it better, there was no point in anymore. And so we wanted to start engaging our staff and engaging our users and trying to figure out how do we make an interface that's better, that works well for all of us as best as we can. So we created, we started with the whole communication bit of creating a blog. We held a series of tug days at the various institutions to try and generate more discussion, generate ideas. And at the time, moving towards the end of 2007, we had 3 initiatives going on in TUG. One was the purchase of Primo. Another was the purchase of the Verity ERM software, which we were in the midst of implementing. And the third one was an upgrade to our Voyager software, which had to happen in order for the Primo installation to work on our servers. And so all of those were completed by the end of 2007. Starting in January of 2008, of this year, we implemented a team made up of 4 staff from Waterloo, 2 from Laurier, and 2 from Guelph. And in March, we received training from Ex Libris. And most importantly, we chose a mascot to help us feel sustained in our endeavor. In After the training in March, it was a very good training session by Ex Libris. They came from, one person came from Boston, one came from Chicago, and we felt very excited to actually see the product, to be able to look at an installation that we had, and we, at that point in March and beginning of April, we actually installed Primo on our server. So really, March, April was the start of the project for us at that time. And in my office environment at Laurier, people who don't really know what Primo is, I should really lock my doors. They arrange for my Primo to have a meeting of sorts. In June, it was quite exciting to actually load data into our test server, on our staging server. And at this point, though, so we started in October of 2007 talking with our staff within TUG. And by this point, it's June of 2008. So we're looking at, 8 or 9 months. And so our staff were starting to wonder what's going on with Primo. And so we started to ramp up the communication we were having with our TUG staff. And unfortunately, I find it a bit unfortunate in hindsight that we actually talked about Primo so early on. In hindsight, I would have rather have started once we had the training in March so that it wasn't lingering over our staff. Because as you can imagine, when you're a staff, a librarian doing class sessions, and you're wondering, what does this mean? Will this change the way I have to do my research? When do I have to worry about this? So that was one thing that we were trying to mitigate by getting interest again and in helping our staff understand what Primo was and what it would mean to them. I really should have locked my door. My kids contributed the cat on the right and the grandpa on the left there from their collection. So as part of the feedback that we wanted to get from the staff, we decided to open our staging server up to them, and we created what we called the Primo Alpha. And we gave them 2 or 3 weeks to look at Primo to actually let them see what was going on. And in the meantime, we were starting to work on our production server. But we gained really valuable information and insight from our staff on what they were seeing of Primo right away. And there's comments, of course, positive and negative, but the overall feeling was very positive in terms of the direction that we were going. And as Alan said, the bar was pretty low with Voyager. We couldn't go anywhere but up in many ways. But we really wanted to make sure we kept our staff informed and engaged as the project goes along in time. That becomes more and more important. In August, that was probably the most exciting time that we had. We really started working with the feedback we got from our staff on the staging server. And we were able to load all of our data into the production server. In the meantime, we migrated from version 1 of Primo to version 2 after seeing how it was going at Vanderbilt and some other Primo installations. And most exciting, we actually set a date for the implementation of a Primo beta. However, and you'll notice my cute little pictures of Primos are disappearing here, we discovered some fairly serious data extract problems. And with any project like this, as other project managers and people involved in these types of things know, stuff happens, and the data that we were getting out of Voyager was there, and we were actually exporting it. It just wasn't exporting it in the way that was necessary for us to be able to present it in Primo. And there were other issues. So, to the everlasting joy of a project manager, the dates start creeping up. So August 26th becomes September 3rd and becomes September 10th. And then, people go on vacation at least we didn't go on strike in our situation, but that's never a foregone conclusion. So moving into September 2008, we decided to not actually set dates anymore. We decided to reevaluate where we were with our project and to basically, we had an understanding of what we saw Primo could be doing from other Primo sites, and we were impressed with what they were doing. And we really understood the fact that what our staff were seeing, when they see something, when they see an example of Primo, when we release it to our staff and to our students, that first impressions are quite significant. So we really wanted to ensure that what we were doing with our production server when we were releasing the Primo beta, that it was as good as it could be. And so we entered into a phase of working with Ex Libris to delineate and to define what were the basic core functionality requirements that we wanted. And we had already done this, of course, but as the project goes along, you know, these things transmute and form into different things. So it was just a good time to reflect again. And throughout the month of September, we worked very closely with Ex Libris, and by the end of the month, they delivered fixes. And in fact, these fixes we've confirmed as of Wednesday, this past Wednesday, the October 1st, that the major fixes are in place. The problems that we had have been solved, and we are now planning now again for our Primo beta launch. But as luck has it, of course, version 2.1 is out now, and so we're watching very carefully as other Primo sites are installing 2.1, and I think three of them have done this now with no major problems. So we're actually also going to be moving to version 2.1 in the next couple of weeks before we go live with our beta. We are currently in a period of extreme testing, and we're really trying to make sure that the data that has come over properly from Voyager and exist nicely in Primo. And by the end of October, mid to end of October, this is where we hope to be with our launch. And this, of course, would be the Waterloo view of Primo. But this is where we hope to be by the end of October. But moving beyond October, and this is where I get really excited about what Primo can do for us, where we'll be with Primo, is to really start engaging with our users. And as was mentioned in my introduction of me, we've moved to a Drupal website at Laurier, and I'm very excited to start the process again of communicating with our users of how they're using our site, how they're interacting with the information. And I'm quite excited about introducing Primo into that mix as well, of understanding how our users are getting to our information. Reading the literature again, I mean, there's lots of great studies of other libraries and other universities that are doing this, public libraries as well. So it's quite exciting to get into that mindset again. Dealing with the issues that have come up with our migration, we really haven't paid too much attention to what's coming out in version 2.1, but we need to focus on those things. But some of the highlights include live tags and reviews, which some of these things are pretty basic at one level, but they're exciting to see that they'll actually be part of the release. Real-time availability, so what's reflected in Primo will be, in terms of status of availability, will be reflected in Primo. And for our librarians, eShelf folder management, basically when you create folders within Primo, that, you know, you can move folders around, rename folders, create RSS feeds on these, create lists, and be able to import these lists elsewhere outside of the Primo environment. And for anyone, any of you guys who are Voyager customers or probably the other major vendors as well, you'll know that changing the OPAC interface can often be a challenge. So, and we've been pleased so far with the amount of leeway we've been given with changing the style sheets of our and the look of our of Primo. But we're excited that 2.1 lets us do that a lot easier as well. From a user's point of view, we really need to start understanding how we integrate with our current catalog, because of course the discovery layer. As those of you who have implemented discovery layers, it sits on top of the existing ILS. So we really need to understand how this discovery layer will sit alongside our catalog, but also our websites as well. How do we want to integrate all those discovery points? We're excited to actually imagine very easily creating different views for all of our different campuses. Between TUG, we represent over 12 different unique locations and campuses, so that'll be exciting to develop those quite easily. Perhaps a bit more complex, a few things have been said about the TUG governance, that TUG has been around for 10 years, and yesterday the pricing model was raised as an example of a success of TUG, and there are many great examples of TUG benefits. One of the drawbacks, though, and kind of alluded to in Alan's introduction about the PowerPoint or the keynote, is that there are policies that have been developed within TUG and that are 10 years old, and these policies are quite hard to change. So how do we continue dealing with e-journals? Do we catalog these things individually in our catalog, but Primo can actually get this information from other sources? Do we actually want to be in that business of cataloging e-journals and e-books? And within the Oakland environment, this e-books also plays has a different connotation. So a lot of these larger TUG policies that have been developed over the 10 years need to be revisited. And as I mentioned before, for our library staff, they're really concerned. What does it mean to me? How does this thing make a difference to what I do every day? And don't bother me until you have something ready kind of attitude, which is I totally appreciate and understand. And so that's something that we want to start grappling with. What does Primo, and not only Primo, what do all of these interfaces that we deal with and we're trying to integrate, whether it's Delicious or whether it's Primo, I don't care what it is. It's always trying to understand how does this affect our public service staff when they're helping students, when they're teaching students, how do these things affect them? And at the very end, I mentioned we started in, I threw out the date of mid-2007. The team, the project implementation team, has really been going at it since March, and we're entering a phase where fatigue can set in. I'm a little bit tired right now, but it's irrelevant. But it's trying to understand how to motivate again, and of course, once we're live with a beta, that will provide a bit more incentive. So what is Primo? And, you know, we do have a production server set up, and I could show you Primo. And I think Sean Meckel said about their Endeca implementation at Toronto, you know, it's a discovery layer. What do you need to know? We've talked about this probably 3 years now. So I'm not going to show you Primo. And in a couple weeks, if you're really interested, come to our site and you'll see a link to it. You can go to all the other Primo sites, which you'll see a list of after. Primo is all of these things. It's single search box, Ferber and deduping, facets, did you mean, cover art, tags and reviews, so on. You can read those there. So this is what Primo is in a nutshell. For our users and for our staff, what it means is going from an interface that looks something like this, from results, to going something like this with the things that I just mentioned. And again, without going into the hood, there are a lot of things in a discovery layer that we're quite excited about. And if you're very quick, you'll be able to write down the URL and get to it, but I just changed it. In a couple weeks, we're hoping that you'll be able to go to our site and link to it. But these are other sites that have implemented Primo, some of these ones here, some of the larger names. And if you go to their sites, you'll see Primo in action. A lot of the Primo installations are still in beta, which I suspect will be for a long time. As with any software, perpetual beta is not necessarily a bad thing. Some sites have done more customization than others. Other sites are more out of the box. And we in TUG are implementing more of an out of the box feel to our Primo installation. We're taking what was given and presenting that to staff, and with the idea there that it's easier to move up from something that's quite basic. But what I will show you are very quick screenshots of some things that some of these other Primo sites have done. And again, the details are less important. It's more that I really feel now we can start engaging our team, the implementation team, and to start thinking about some of these exciting things, to start contributing back to the different projects that are going on across Ontario and around the world, frankly. Some of the open source projects, some other implementations of Endeca, or whatever it is. It's nice to be able to think about these things, some different different examples of using the data in different ways. So putting a widget in Facebook, I think we've seen some of those things. Creating a Google gadget for Primo, as Emory University has done here. Social bookmarking, integrating that within records. I think we saw that the other day as well in the catalog. The University of Iowa, they have been able to do a harvest of their content DM material. So they have ingested all of that information into and have the what Primo call what Ex Libris calls a pipe into the data. So all of their content DM sits within Primo as well in the search context. Bridgeport has ingested all of the University of Michigan mBooks into their. They've created a pipe for that, so that all the mBooks are in their search, Primo search, creating a search box on their page, as New York University Library has done. Actually, New York University Library was in a unique position of moving from a very old catalog, and instead of going into an intermediate interface, they actually went with Primo as their only interface for their catalog. They're the first ones to have done that. But perhaps the most exciting, and as Alan talked about, is the ability for Primo to deep search into other resources. And I think we've all, most of us have heard the probably more of the cons of federated searching. There are benefits, perhaps, but I think federated searching introduces another level of issues that usability issues when it comes down to it. We've understood from our users, even in Ontario, when we trialed a federated search product, it didn't work well for the users in the end. Deep search provides is Primo's it's a Primo API that allows Primo to communicate with other databases and via an API on the other end, and the data comes back. The nice thing about the data is that it puts it in the context of Primo. So when the data comes back, the index is not created locally within Primo. The search is taken out of Primo into the remote resource, interacts with the API connector on their end, and then sends back the data and puts it in the context. All the results are in the context of Primo as if the resources were local. So all the facets would be recognizing the subjects and dates and so on. Deep Search was developed by Ex Libris in conjunction with the Royal Library of Denmark. And they have a database which is somehow can be compared to Scholar's Portal. They have databases like InSpec and ABI Inform, various EBSCO databases, IEEE, Springer, so on. So their database of 65 million is not that far different from Scholar's Portal, and they have successfully been able to incorporate those resources into Primo, into the Primo interface. So as Alan mentioned, we are in discussion with Scholar's Portal folk to start talking about how we can make this work for Primo as well. This is again, we were not out for mere OPAC replacement, and of course the milestone will be reached in October. We're hoping to move now to where we really want to be, is creating and understanding the search interface for our users that is reducing the number of interfaces our users have to deal with, and investigating that option as well. So as we move forward, we want to start understanding the opportunities and taking advantage of the opportunities, and to focus on access and delivery as our goals. Those are the goals that we want for our users. We want to reduce the last point there. Primo is another tool in our arsenal to reduce the steps between the moment a student discovers a resource and the moment that they are able to get their hot little hands on it. We want to reduce those steps. We want to become relevant again. It's very frustrating for anyone who in this room who does this kind of thing to be sidelined by Google, and I sideline myself. I use Google myself, and it's frustrating not to be able to play along those lines, to be able to play with Google and with OCLC to understand better how we can engage our users to keep them within the context of the library that we are creating. I look forward to doing usability tests, and within the context at Laurier, we have our Drupal installation since August, so I'm looking forward to start understanding again how we can work better with the students for the interface. I really look forward to, we've seen out of the box Ferberization, deduping, and tags and reviews from Primo, but I look forward to calibrating these things and understanding the did you mean feature. We can tweak that quite a bit so that we're able to make it a good experience so that we don't get dropped, as Alan's story suggests, dropped hits when the Did You Mean feature comes up. 2010 is the, in Ontario, all of us need to start now complying with the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act. And not that we wouldn't do this anyways, but Primo, going with Primo now and for Laurier with our Drupal installation, it's a good time to leverage these new tools to start thinking about that more carefully. But in the end, it's regaining control of our interfaces to take what we are given from the vendors and be able to work with the interface, but also the data that sits in there to deep search, to get feeds of open source, public domain ebooks, OAI feeds, talking with Walter about ingesting Laurier's Our Ontario collection or even the entire Our Ontario or Alouette collection within Primo. And the final thing I'll say about this is Ex Libris has created something called the EL Commons. And speaking from a personal point of view and kind of listening in the past couple of days about open source and proprietary, I have my hands in both pots. I'm speaking Drupal out of this side of my, you know, the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing for the political... come on, the George Bush thing, you know, the left hand doesn't know. My Drupal side speaks just as loud and vociferously as my proprietary EL, Ex Libris side, because I'm working on both projects. And listening again to all of these discussions, I'm probably a very good fence sitter on this one. But I was very heartened to see that Ex Libris... from what I understand, and you know, you take these things with a grain of salt, but they have dedicated themselves and committed themselves to becoming more open, and they've created this something called the EL Commons, which is a place that both Ex Libris and all of their customers are able to share code, to post code, to criticize code, and to become more. I don't want to say open source within the vendor context, but at one level, from some of the things that I've seen on here already, it's quite interesting to see what Ex Libris has posted in terms of some of code snippets. So it'll be interesting to see this one, how this plays out in terms of the models that we're talking about of open source and proprietary.
And then I get to finish up. So the other thing that these projects have done for us is it allows us to address some of our organizational things. So the TUG initiative projects will provide the basis for an updated governance model. We're just trying to get through these projects, and then we'll have a new platform to start figuring out what the next steps are. We'll be looking at all of our TUG governance and trying to figure out what makes sense for us as we go forward. We've taken initial steps with Basecamp for improved project management processes, which is really great. People were sort of dragged kicking and screaming a little bit into that, but it's worked out pretty well so far. We've also tried to improve communication through our three campuses. So we've started to use Adobe Connect and Skype and things like that to shorten the geographic distance. Happily, test plans are actually being written and put into a repository so that we can repeat some of these things as well. So I'm very happy about that as well. And we've also begun to explore regression testing so that we don't have to have somebody sit down and do the testing. We can press a button and have the tests go. So that's also great. It's getting us into doing different kind of work in a new way. And finally, my favorite one is that our cataloging and metadata librarian has been working with the XML, and she borrowed my Mastering Regular Expressions book. So I was pretty psyched about that when that happened, too. And that's the end. Thank you very much. And if there's any questions, we're happy to take them. That was a good pub crawl. Oh, here's one.